This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
All right, get ready to win big this NFL season with a VSiN Pro subscription. Sign up for our football special before the end of July. Get full VSiN Pro access from now through the Super Bowl for an early bird discount of $175. Saves you nearly 50% off the monthly rate. With VSiN Pro, you'll gain access to daily best bets, exclusive betting splits data, proven systems and analysis from pro cappers, 24/7 content, and of course, our special edition betting guides. NFL Guide is out now. Expert insights, in-depth coverage will keep you informed, help you make smarter bets throughout the season. Don't wait. Sign up by the end of this month. Get full VSiN Pro access through the Super Bowl for an early bird discount of $175. Sign up now at VSiN.com/subscribe. Jared Smith in for Mike and Stormy today here on the Lombardi Line. And now it's time to go out to the Progressive Guest Line. Welcome in our first guest of the show. He's the co-host of VSiN Tonight, senior NBA analyst here at VSiN. He is Jonathan Von Tobel. JVT, appreciate the time, pal. It's been, I know, a busy time for you. You got a lot going on. You got Summer League, you got free agency, you got the Olympics. We can maybe touch on that a little bit. But let's start with what I think has been the biggest story, at least over the last couple of days, and that's the Russell Westbrook news, at least free agency-wise, player movement-wise, in terms of guys that are actually going to be playing, I think, when we get to the regular season. Do you make anything of this move? Does this move the needle for you at all with the Denver Nuggets heading into the upcoming season?
I mean, I don't think it moves the needle, and if anything, it might move your needle in the wrong direction, Ooh. Right? But not to the point where it's going to affect this team's chances to make a postseason or anything like that. But, you know, Jared, this is a team now in the Denver Nuggets that has some real questions about its depth and the changes that they have made to their roster, right? Kentavious Caldwell-Pope is now gone. He is with the Orlando Magic. So now you're sliding up Christian Brown to be your starting two guard. We'll see how that works out. The numbers would dictate that Brown in the backcourt was a positive, but playing the role of a starter, a guy who's supposed to be a knockdown dead-eye shooter and be a really good defender like KCP was, we'll see what that looks like over the course of an increased role. Your bench is increasingly young when you look at those guys. Julian Strother's having a really strong summer league, but you're hoping that that's legitimate for a 6'6" guard who can shoot. You're hoping that pans out in the regular season. Peyton Watson's a young player who's going to slot in at your backup power forward spot. So you look at all of this, and then you look at the loss of Reggie Jackson, your backup point guard last year. You needed something, so you went out and got Russell Westbrook. I think you just have questions as to what the rest of this depth looks like for the Denver Nuggets. And if Russ Westbrook is going to change, acquiesce a bit in terms of what his role is going to be, what he's willing to do, it's going to be positive because Nikola Jokic is still one of the best players in basketball. But if you're talking about comparing them to the teams or team that would be ahead of them in the Western Conference, Oklahoma City for sure, if you put Minnesota up there, like this is going to be, I think, one team that you rate slightly worse than those competing for a championship around them, and very much worse, I would say, than the Oklahoma City Thunder when you talk to them in comparison.
Yeah, I don't want to say it reeks of desperation, but you know, what are you going to get out of Russell Westbrook, and is he willing to change to your system, whereas he's been a guy that's kind of been his own system throughout the course of his career? It's going to be an interesting transition, to say the least. Speaking of interesting transitions, Alex Sarr is going through it right now in the Summer League as we kind of transition to what's happening currently here in Vegas. It has been really tough for the number two pick to the Wizards. Just 2 points through two games. He's basically missed every shot that he's taken. Is that just early, you know, jitters, or is there some concern there with some of these guys that are coming into the league trying to make a name for themselves?
No, I think this is a microcosm of what we were just thinking about this last draft, right? This is a whole bunch of guys who are going to be developmental pieces, whether it's going to be their offensive game or their defensive game. And for Sarr, it's going to be his offensive game. You're going to have some rough patches. So you're going to see these performances, I think, in this type of setting. And I also think, too, it should be noted, Summer League play, Jared, is very much geared toward these guards, right? If you're a guard, you're going to have a pretty good time. You're going to have the ball in your hands. You're going to be able to take shots, pull the trigger when you want, get rid of it, right? Get rid of those grenades at the end of shot clocks if it's not going to go well for you, things like that. But for a guy like Sarr, where you're working things out, you're mostly defensive, and you're not going to have the best opportunity on offense, I think you're going to struggle a little bit. And so I think you put those two things together and you get the performances that you see from Sarr. But when you watch him, you still see those flashes defensively that were the reason why he was up at the top of the draft. He's a very good rim protector. He can be. He's very athletic, can go flash on the perimeter defensively if he needs to. He can recover. He can help. So you saw some of the positives, and I think that's why you come away from this thinking like, all right, it's Summer League. Let's chill when we get out of this, and let's see what he looks like when you get to the NBA regular season. Because right now, it's just an odd setting. And we've seen the polar opposites of both sides, right? We've seen Ben Simmons go out there in that Summer League and yep. rain down mid-range jumpers, follow-away shots, post up guys and spin off and do all that kind of stuff, and then not have that as part of his game when he got to the regular season. I was joking when I was at Summer League the other day with somebody who watched a small young guard out there in Las Vegas a few years back, said, hey, this guy's going to be terrible. Well, Chris Paul just signed with the San Antonio Spurs, and I think he's had a pretty good career. So you can do all sorts of things coming out of the Summer League. You don't want to overreact one way or the other, positive or negative.
Yeah, it's 21 shots. I mean, I'm sure people will overreact because that is the culture that we live in. But at the end of the day, it's 21 shots, the first 21 shots of his professional career in what's basically an exhibition. So I don't think the Wizards are going to be very good this year. I know we talked about this earlier in the week on a numbers game. Like, they're an underplay. But, man, oh, man, it's tough to grade a kid coming into the league and just after a couple games. Speaking of grading a kid coming into the league and who's going to be over-scrutinized and overreacted to, Bronny James played a little bit better the other night, 13 points, yep. 5 boards. But really, it's Dalton Knecht, who we kind of thought was going to be the gem of those two Lakers draft picks, who I think was maybe underdrafted a little bit in the middle of that first round. He's played really well. So it looks like the Lakers, at least, the young kid's moving in a positive direction.
Yeah, I think, and he's going to be the one too. So out of all this noise that we get out of the Summer League, one of the things that's going to be interesting is a guy like Dalton Knecht. You know, he is a dude that obviously slips farther than most expected him. A lot of the mock drafts had him in that 7-8-9 range. He obviously does not go there, but he should fit exactly perfectly with LeBron James and the Los Angeles Lakers. He is a catch-and-shoot threat. He does not need the ball in his hands. He does not need to dribble or eat up possessions or usage. He is going to be perfect for a team that, if we believe what J.J. Redick said in his introductory press conference, is going to ratchet up that three-point rate. From a percentage standpoint, the Lakers were actually one of the better teams in the NBA. But from a volume standpoint, they were one of the worst teams in the NBA. So if they increase that volume while Knecht allows them to maintain some sort of positive in terms of shooting percentage, not only is he going to help this team be a little bit better than we expected, he's going to be in contention for that rookie of the year because he's going to get the shots and the open shots at that when guys like Anthony Davis and LeBron James are eating up the space that they are.
Yeah, speaking of rookie of the year, we were talking about it off the top, like the amount of bets that Bronny has gotten so far in that market. I mean, is it just something that almost like nostalgic? Like, you just want to have a ticket in your hand because in case it happens, it would be unbelievable. There's no way this kid's winning rookie of the year. Like, I just don't understand the attention that he's getting. I guess I do understand it, but it's hard for me to understand.
Yeah, I think this is exactly what you kind of see with these sort of markets, which is let's just take a long shot and let's see what happens. But I will say this. Look, I think you obviously want more than 250-1. But I have been consistent in saying this about the Los Angeles Lakers. It is a good franchise for him to land with, Jared, because that is a franchise that has a track record of drafting and developing players. Look around the NBA right now today when you see Alex Caruso, a prime pickup this offseason. Kyle Kuzma was a very good player. If he goes to another team, he's going to help contribute to winning. Lonzo Ball, Josh Hart, Brandon Ingram. We can go down the list of former guys who wore a Lakers uniform at the beginning of their career who turned out to be pretty good players and are still contributing to teams to this day. And if he's going to land with a franchise that can do it, it would be Los Angeles. And you don't want to freak out again as we're talking about this. Look at this. Not even his last game. His last two games. The 2 games ago, he scores 12 points. He goes 5 of 11 from the floor, 2 of 5 from three-point range, has a rebound and a block or a steal, excuse me. And then the last game, as you mentioned, he has 13 points, 5 of 10 from the floor, has 5 rebounds, 3 assists, and 2 blocks. Like, there's going to be stuff here. He projects to be a Davion Mitchell type, and I think that there's some positives. So to your point about Rookie of the Year, I want more. I don't think he's going to have a statistical profile that will garner Rookie of the Year attention. Having said that, I think he's going to be a perfectly fine player if they allow him to grow at the rate that he should.
Let's quickly touch on the Olympics because I'll be honest, this is going to be something I'll be keeping an eye on. We did get some news about Kevin Durant expected to return to Team USA practice today after missing some time with a strained calf. We've seen Anthony Edwards be really impressive so far early on. USA is a $5 favorite to win gold. I'm not running to the window to bet that. But just break down what we're going to see in the Olympics. Is there a team that maybe can push Team USA a little bit?
So I talked about this with Mike Somich when I filled in on the handle over the weekend. So I did bet France at 14-1 to win gold. I think it, for me, it's a number play, Jared. I think they should be considered the second best team. I don't think that Canada, when you look at their depth at center, which is pretty thin, it should be considered the second best team. Their guard play is awesome. But in FIBA basketball and in this setting, where you look at the teams that are competing near the top, expected to have the best shot at gold. Team USA's got some awesome center depth. The Serbians have 6 guys on their roster that are 6'10 or taller. The French have Victor Wembanyama and Rudy Gobert. Team Canada's got Dwight Powell, Kelly Olynyk, and former UNLV great Ken Birch, who's 6'8" and 220. Like, you know, like there's not that much at center. And so I think that that's going to be something that holds them back in a more physical setting like FIBA hoops. So I think for me, my money would be on taking France. But look at what Team USA has done, to your point, really quickly. They've had three friendlies, two of which they have played among the teams that are thought to compete for gold. Serbia and Canada absolutely dismantled them. Wow. It's going to be hard to go against Team USA.
Awesome stuff. Jonathan Von Tobel, co-host of VSiN tonight, of course, does a great job covering the NBA. Stay busy, pal. I know you got a lot of college football recruits to talk to as well.
That's right. Charlotte 49ers on the way up, baby.
The dynasty continues. JVT, great stuff. We appreciate the time on the NBA. Yeah, I'm excited about the Olympics. I think it's one of those, like the time difference is always difficult, but we just dealt with it with the Euro with soccer, so it's not too much to overcome. I will be paying very close attention to a couple of these I would call them lesser teams as they try to do anything to stay within Team USA. But great analysis on France there. They've got a couple of bigs that can certainly make the FIBA world much more difficult. More Lombardi Line after this.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
All right, welcome back to the Lombardi Line. Let's talk a little bit about the website, VSiN.com. Check it out. We got all kinds of fun stuff today, including baseball being back. And I saw not only Steve Mackinnon has his top plays based on the splits and the power ratings, but also Josh Applebaum. Of course, talking a lot about the betting splits today as the Major League Baseball world is back after the All-Star break. You can check it all out over at VSiN.com. Jared Smith in for Mike and Stormy today on the Lombardi Line. We appreciate the time here on this Friday. Let's go back out to the Progressive Guest Line. Time to talk NFL, time to talk Chargers. It's Daniel Popper, senior writer for The Athletic. Does a great job covering the Chargers, who are going through a ton of offseason upheaval, not only at the head coach position, but of course, a lot of the coaching staff as Jim Harbaugh comes into town. And Daniel, that's really where I want to start here, because it's been, I guess now you've had some time to kind of absorb and digest this new regime. What are your first impressions of Coach Harbaugh, and how do you think he's going to have an impact on this team right out of the gate?
Yeah, I mean, first impressions are that you have a coach coming in with a significant pedigree, a guy that has won everywhere he's been, at the pro level, at the college level, and that pedigree has an effect on everyone in the organization, from the players to his coaching staff to the front office to ownership. There's a ton of excitement surrounding the team and the organization because of what he's accomplished and what they believe he's going to accomplish here in Los Angeles. And you're seeing just a galvanized organization from top to bottom as a result of Jim Harbaugh joining the team.
Yeah, and I was interested in his, you know, what coordinator moves he would make. I think Greg Roman, of course, takes the year off after a pretty successful stint in Baltimore, got Lamar Jackson an MVP. Didn't end well there, but I think that was an intriguing hire. And then, of course, he brings over his pal Jesse Minter from Michigan, who's done just incredible job with the Michigan defense through this last run here. I think if you had to pick offense or defense, which side of the ball do you think is better suited for success right away? What do you think that would be?
It's a good question. I'm probably going to go offense just because of Justin Herbert. Mm. I mean, you start there. He's obviously a world-class talent and, in my opinion, one of the best quarterbacks in the league. The other facet of it is there's a very clear identity and philosophy of how they want to play offensive football. They want to run the ball. They want to be physical. Greg Roman has called it a powerful, strong identity. That's really important to have, and it might seem like a super simple thing, but when you have a coaching staff come in and from day one say, this is exactly how we're going to play from a philosophical standpoint, from a schematic standpoint, that has a really important impact on the players. What I'm fascinated by is how do you make that work? Mm. When you have a quarterback that is that talented, but you want the philosophy and the scheme to be run first, how does that come together? I think the belief is that if you take some of the pressure off of Justin Herbert's shoulders and you're able to run the ball effectively, what does that allow him to do? How much better can he be as a result, and can you win football games? But I think they have the pieces up front. They have a lot of talent on the offensive line. And I think with a better scheme and this really defined identity, you're going to see a good running game. And what does Justin Herbert look like when you pair him with a good running game? We've never seen that before. And I think that's sort of the vision.
Yeah, I think if you go back and you watch those Ravens offenses under Greg Roman, obviously the running game with Lamar Jackson was key. Justin Herbert, not the same type of quarterback, but you do have some very interesting pieces around him. And one interesting piece that I just want to get your thoughts on, of course, Brandon Ayuk making all the news recently with his trade demands. Do you think the Chargers would be interested in a player like Ayuk? And is that a guy that you think might fit the system, or any rumblings you might have heard that LA might be intrigued in adding another receiver?
In a vacuum, there's a fit there, right? Like, the Chargers obviously moved on from Keenan Allen and Mike Williams. They did draft Ladd McConkey, but they are thin at receiver. The question is, what's it going to take for the 49ers to deal Ayuk? And it's not going to be, you know, future draft capital. You're going to have to give the 49ers something that they feel like gives them a better chance to win a Super Bowl in 2024. I don't think the Chargers are in a position where they're going to be giving away talent on the roster right now. So it does make sense in some sense, but I just think, given where the 49ers are at, it's going to be hard to find a deal that really gets it done. But he's obviously a player that would fit into what the Chargers need as far as, you know, where their wide receiver depth chart is at right now.
Yeah, I've been going back and forth about this Chargers team because I do think the beginning of the season's favorable, right? You get Vegas at home week one. They're a favorite there. They're obviously going to be a favorite on the road at Carolina. And then you get a couple of tough games. Obviously, the game against Kansas City is always intriguing, but they've had some success against the Chiefs over the last few years. And then you get that early bye. And I think that favors, like, if I'm thinking new coach, new regime, new offense, I want an early bye. I mean, I think getting it right after that Chiefs game makes sense. You know, some teams might want the later bye if you're a little bit more of a veteran-laden team. I don't know if that really fits the vibe of this Chargers squad. I think after, you know, everything that's new, playing a few games and then getting a chance to take a breather after week four and taking a step back. And then I'll be honest, like, that's a middle part of the schedule. Denver, Arizona, New Orleans at home. Cleveland's going to be tough. Then you get Tennessee. Like you can reel off 4 or 5 wins after the bye there and really put yourself in a good position to maybe compete for this division. Do you think that first half of the schedule favors what the Chargers are trying to accomplish here?
Yeah, I think you make a great point. You know, you're introducing new schemes on both sides of the ball, offense and defense. You get a little small sample size there early in the season, and then you can sort of go back to the drawing board. You have some tape to work with, and then you can make adjustments to move forward. So I think you're on it. Listen, like, I am a little bit higher on this team than I've been in teams in the past with the Chargers, just because of the head coach. I mean, the guy's just won. Like, it's just what he's done everywhere he's been. So why wouldn't it happen here? And you go into the points about the schedule, that it's not an overwhelming, you know, schedule considering how terrible the season was last year and who they're faced up against. So, you know, I think that they're going to be, you know, in the mix for the playoffs. I don't know if they're going to push for the division, but I could see this team getting to 10 wins and being in the mix for the wild card. That's really where I'm at, just because you're going to get so much improvement in terms of the coaching, really in all areas.
Yeah, I definitely think making the playoffs is an intriguing bet. I'm pulling up the odds right now. I think it's in... My guess is, it's right around even money. It's +110 at DraftKings right now for them to make the playoffs. Win total there on your screen, 8.5. I think, like, they're favored in 9 games. And again, these are early numbers that we're getting from DraftKings. The numbers could change. I'm seeing a lot of close lines because of those 9 games that they're favored in. They're only favored by more than a field goal in 3 of them. So, you know, that means that there's 6 games on their schedule where they're basically barely a favorite. And there's a bunch of games on their schedule where they're barely a dog. They are only a dog of more than 3 in 1 game the whole season. So most of the Chargers season, and this is kind of par for the course, Daniel. I know you've been down this road before. It seems like it's between 1 score on the positive side or the negative side. And maybe to your point, that new regime, the new mindset with Jim Harbaugh, those games that they've just been falling short, losing by a field goal, losing in heartbreaking fashion, the talent is there, but maybe now the mindset can kind of will this team across the finish line in some of those tighter games.
Exactly. And you know, you build your team in how you see it and how you think you can win football games. And so what Jim Harbaugh believes in is, like, late in games, you got to be able to run the football. Like, you can't, you know, abandon that early on in games and throughout a season. And then when you need it, expect to be able to run the football. You go back to 2022 when the Chargers blew that game in Jacksonville. You know, like, they couldn't run the ball in the second half. They had 7 yards on 7 carries after building that huge lead in the first half. The problem was they hadn't been able to run the ball all season. So when they needed it, they didn't have it. The thought process here is you come in from day one and you say, we are going to be good at this thing. We are going to be able to run the football. So when you have a lead up three, up seven in the fourth quarter, you've already instilled this mentality since April that we are going to put away games in the fourth quarter by being more physical and being able to run the football. And like, you get to these moments in games, like the NFL is always like this, where it's one score late in games. And if you have this ability to just out physical teams late in games and you've built that up, you know, that could be the difference. And ultimately that comes down to coaching. It comes down to vision. It comes down to how you sort of build your program from the moment you step foot in the building.
Yeah. And again, just looking at the odds, you can kind of see where some of those pockets of value might be. For example, the Chargers are basically 3-1 to win the division, and Jim Harbaugh is 10-1 to be coach of the year. If the Chargers win the division and upend the Chiefs, Jim Harbaugh is probably going to be coach of the year. So again, you know, when we're talking through this stuff, we think LA might have a chance at the top there. That wouldn't surprise me at all. He's a second favorite to be coach of the year. If they win that division, I think he's going to be strongly considered for that award.
Yeah, no, 100%. And then you also have like the name recognition and the value there when you get into the voting process. So, you know, I wouldn't go as far as saying like I think they're going to win the division. Like, there's been times over the past, you know, 3 years where I've, you know, said, hey, they're going to contend. And it's just like, I have to see it. I have to see the Chargers actually compete with the Chiefs for the division before I can say that's a possibility. But if you tell me that they're, you know, a game over 500 late in the season and they're in the mix for the wild card, like, that would not surprise me at all, because I think they have enough there on the roster. And then I just think there's going to be so much improvement with the coaching, with the philosophy, all the things we've talked about. I mean, I go back to like fourth quarter stuff, right? Like, in practice, they do fourth quarter finishing periods to end every practice where they're pushing around sleds of, you know, 40, like, you know, 45 plates stacked on each other. You know, and Jim Harbaugh's doing it with them. He's partnered up with Junior Colson doing these fourth quarter finishing drills. And it's like, it sounds like a little bit corny, but at the end of the day, like, this is the stuff that you have to instill in your players to pull out games in the fourth quarter. And I think they're going to get a few more wins as a result of this philosophy.
Daniel Popper, senior writer for The Athletic, covers the Chargers. Appreciate the time, pal.
Thanks for having me.
More Lombardi Line after this on VSiN.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Oh, hey, check out the new VSiN.com. I got all kinds of stuff up there. Best bets, betting splits, exclusive articles, odds by state, betting tools, betting guides. The NFL guide is up now. College football guide's coming out soon. It is all available to you over at VSiN.com. All right, Jared Smith in for Michael and Stormy today on this Friday edition of the Lombardi Line. Time now to go out to the Progressive Guest Line and welcome in our next guest. His name is Brendan Glasheen. Does a great job calling the WNBA for the Connecticut Sun. And he's got a nice little all-star break on his hands right now. Not a whole lot of games for you to talk about, Brendan, but you are beating the heat out there in Phoenix. How's the break treating you so far?
Been good, thank you. I got in last night. Looking forward to a great weekend. We got the Skills Challenge tonight, all-star game tomorrow. I'm sure we'll get into that. A lot of good stuff, good eating tomorrow in Phoenix.
Yeah, it's kind of a, I would say, not the most unique. I'm sure there's been unique All-Star games in the past, but I think this year the intensity level ratcheted up because of the whole Caitlin Clark, Angel Reese, all of the new fresh stars coming into the league and really making things interesting. No Caitlin Clark in the three-point contest. Did that surprise you? And is there something maybe there behind the scenes we're not really privy to?
Yeah, so I think – so Clark and Sabrina Ionescu were both invited, but they both declined because they are here in Phoenix for Team USA – well, at least Ionescu is here for Team USA training camp. As far as Clark's concerned, I'm not entirely sure what that might be about as far as declining. They did play on Wednesday night and had to make the trip yesterday, so maybe because of the quick turnaround, the Fever did play on Wednesday night, but – the invite was out to both of those players, and they chose to decline.
Yeah, and you get a unique vantage point sitting courtside watching these players. I mean, based off of what you've seen so far, just how much better is Caitlin Clark than maybe you expected heading into the season? You've had a chance to watch her a couple times facing the Sun this year.
Yeah, Jared, going into the year, I thought the best way for Clark to be assimilated into the WNBA was going to be as a distributor, as a passer. Now, I think the chemistry with a team that's picked at the top of the draft the last couple of years, you've got some talented pieces. The question becomes, in a two-week period, you just played a full college basketball season into the Final Four, into the national title game. Okay, here you go. 2 weeks, figure it out. I mean, that would be like us asking these five first-round quarterbacks in the NFL. You get 2 weeks, you're starting week one. Good luck. Figure it out. So between the lack of rest, the lack of a camp, a chance to build, she put on some muscle. She's gained 2 pounds of muscle, according to the broadcast on Wednesday. So I thought Clark would come into the league a little bit faster. So I think they almost put her in a bad position to be a scorer first and not set up as a distributor. Now, as we've come to find out, she's pretty elite at both of those things, and now she's not being asked to have to score 20-plus a night. We saw her set a WNBA single-season, single-game record with 19 assists on Wednesday. I'm not too surprised by this. The chemistry with Aaliyah Boston, that's what we saw from the beginning, and also the tough competition. I understood what the league was trying to do. Let's get her on TV, highlight some of the other stars, but you didn't protect your star all that well. So I know there's that healthy back and forth about did they get it right, but Caitlin Clark now with lesser games, the Fever are going to have a softer landing coming out of that Olympic break in terms of their schedule. Caitlin Clark is big time, and she's proven as a distributor, as a floor general, she is already elite at this level.
Yeah, it's a fantastic point, too, about the rest. And, you know, the comparison you made to the quarterbacks in the NFL, there are no NFL international competitions. There is such a big gap between college football and the NFL that this is never an issue in football. The WNBA and college basketball kind of kiss up against each other with their season. So this is an issue. And then you throw in all of the other things that Caitlin is dealing with right now. And not just her, all of the other rookies that are going through a similar transition. It is a difficult first year. And I know everyone was up in arms about her not making the Olympic team. But let's look big picture for a minute. Give her a break for a month. Like, she'll be on plenty of Olympic teams going forward. I'm sure she's, what, 22 years old? She's going to probably be on 3 or 4 more Olympic teams over the course of her career. I'm not saying she's not worthy of being on the Olympic team, but my guess is, similar to the situation with the three-point contest, girl just needs a breather.
Sure does, right? I mean, consider everything you just said. I couldn't agree with you more. I understand the value of having her there. I think that was a worthy conversation, honestly, about whether you go one way or the other. I get it. Look at Team USA on the men's side. They've had college players on that team. I'm fully in for the conversation and why it did cause kind of an uproar, but we have to protect your asset, right? If we're going to say all these things about how she's played a lot of games, she's playing the defending champions and playoff teams early in the season, well, if you believe that, then maybe you should look out for the asset, protect your star, and give her a couple of weeks. So I know there's been rumblings about some injuries maybe going on. Maybe there is a spot for her, but I think Caitlin needs to put the basketball down. She even said it. She even told Christy Sides, the head coach of the Fever, I think I'm going to put a ball down for the first time in almost a year and just take a break and get away from the game. I think it'll be good for her. And I think the important thing for the league's probably happy about it because they can come out of the break and make a playoff push.
Yeah, and I think everyone just needs a kind of a breather, right? It's been a very heated first half. You know, you get the Angel Reese stuff. You get the fact that Caitlin's kind of being bullied on the floor a little bit. And I don't think it was over the top. I think she was, you know, she was getting pushed around a little bit. It was her rookie year. But now everyone kind of gets to take a step back. I mean, she's the rookie of the year. I know there's been pushback with Angel Reese, but I mean, to me, it's pretty obvious at this point. The market's telling you she's rookie of the year, and that's it's obvious to me. Go ahead, bud.
Yeah, so to jump in on that, I thought going back a couple of weeks, at the time, I thought Reese had the better case.
Sure.
I did. Going back 3-4 weeks, Clark has now taken that baton because of not just the double-double record, but the fact that Reese, as far as an impact rebounder, I know her field goal percentage wasn't great, but you can't ignore Clark's turnovers. And they've been winning games now. They've won 8 of 13 now since starting 1-8. But Clark has now taken the lead. I felt at the time that Reese was the front runner going back a couple of weeks, but I had a feeling Clark was going to take it. And I think that's going to help the fact that their schedule does soften quite a bit. But absolutely, right now, I think it's Caitlin Clark's award to lose. Angel Reese will make a compelling case because of her impact on the glass. But as far as scoring, the offensive efficiency as a team with Kelsey Mitchell, Aaliyah Boston, Alyssa Smith, Clark has elevated that team, and that's elevated her in her case.
Yeah, this is the closest thing we have to politics in sports. I always say the awards markets are politics just kind of reincarnated in a sports, wrapper. And because of just the, you know, all of the controversy that surrounded this little comeuppance between these two players. I mean, this is going to be a very heated debate going forward.
Jared, they're going to be teammates in the All-Star game on Saturday. I'm telling you, I think folks got to tune into this thing. 5:30, West Coast time, 8:30 Eastern, ABC. That's going to be good eating. And Caitlin really Clark has taken the high road. I think she's done a good job with the 100%. Press and the media. Angel Reese, I think, has been better. I mean, I know she was caught on camera with Gondrasik and Jaylen Brown regarding Bronny James the other day. Angel kind of has to make up her mind if she wants to fully embrace the villain thing, which is healthy for sports. We got the Bird Magic thing kind of going on here. So Angel's...
I think we might have lost Brendan there. That's a tough screenshot to lose, Avad. But he made a really good point. I think if you want my two cents on this awards market, Angel Reese was getting a little bit of artificial inflation. I don't believe that she was ever a viable candidate to win it. I just think they wanted to have more of a storyline. And I think we have Brendan back now. Brendan, Megan, a good, but no, it's all good, bud. You were so excited about the WNBA All-Star game that's going to be taking place that you just, you know, spun right off the stratosphere there. But let's transition into that because this is a unique format, right? And it's kind of an Olympic prep for Team USA. But also, it's a chance to showcase the best stars that aren't on Team USA. And I'm not surprised that Team USA is favored in the game, but I'll be honest, I wouldn't be surprised if the WNBA All-Stars competed here just based off of the talent on that side of the ledger.
1,000% agree. 1,000%. You've got a couple of snubs. You could mention Clark in that, Arike Ogunbowale. You do bring in that factor of motivation, which I know we talk about a lot when it comes to the NFL or the NBA and given spots on a schedule. I think that's a very great point when it comes to these WNBA All-Stars. Not all of them. Some kind of know where they stand and are happy to be there, like Kayla McBride, and I do the Connecticut Sun games, Dawana Bonner, Breonna Jones. They're like, hey, great, happy to be here. But as far as some of these All-Stars are concerned, such as Arike Ogunbowale, Caitlin Clark, and even Angel Reese, to the extent that, hey, we belong, just the sense that we belong here. So as far as like those MVP odds, I wouldn't be surprised. Like, I think there's some good value as it pertains to some of the All-Stars, because I think the Olympians, you got to keep in mind with the Olympians too, they've got bigger goals in mind here, right, in Paris down the road. So minutes, how that all works with Cheryl Reeve, that's a fascinating dynamic. So I wouldn't be surprised either. I think you're onto something.
You're crazy if you don't at least consider Caitlin Clark to win the MVP of this game. I mean, again, what is it, like 10-1? Like, I would absolutely just put a little nibble out there into the market, right, Brendan? We're not going to be shoving all of our chips into the middle, but I would not be shocked if she got every opportunity to be the MVP of this game.
Hey, man, it's not like, so as far as the guard room with Arike, as far as a pure ball handler, you're not playing another real game for a month, so leave it all out there in Phoenix. I get it. I wish it was a little longer, but she's part of the conversation, understandably. So it should be fun to watch. Yeah, but look at that list. Look at as far as the top of the board. As far as guards are concerned, Caitlin Clark's at the top of that list for the All-Stars.
Awesome stuff. Brendan Glasheen, enjoy the time in Phoenix, pal.
Jared, big fan of yours. Keep doing your thing. Appreciate you having me on.
Love it, bro. WNBA All-Star game this weekend in Phoenix. More Lombardi Line after this.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
I get ready to win big this NFL season with a VSiN Pro subscription. Sign up for a football special before the end of July. Get full VSiN Pro access from now through the Super Bowl for an early bird discount of $175. Saves you nearly 50% off the monthly price. With VSiN Pro, you gain access to daily best bets, exclusive betting splits, proven systems, analysis from pro cappers, 24/7 video content, and our special edition betting guides, like our new NFL betting guide, packed with detailed team, division, and conference analyses, plus season win totals, futures, props, and awards best bets. Our expert insights, in-depth coverage will keep you informed and help you make smarter bets throughout the season. Don't wait. Sign up for the end of July. Get full VSiN Pro access through the Super Bowl for nearly an early bird discount, $175. Sign up now, VSiN.com/subscribe. All right, we're back on the Lombardi Line, Friday edition. Jared in for Mike and Stormy today. We appreciate you hanging out with us. And now we're going back out to the Progressive Guest Line. Going to go from the Chargers to the Chiefs. Talked Chargers in our last hour. Now we're going to talk a little Chiefs. Matt Derrick, beat reporter for ChiefsDigest.com. Of course, also works for Sports Radio 810. Author of Patrick Mahomes Showtime. Might be asking some book questions today. But Matt, I think we need to start with just overall What you've seen so far in the offseason, I know the rookie class was all the rage, especially the first-round pick, Xavier Worthy. Have you seen anything through this first initial wave of training camp and OTAs and rookie camps and all the fun stuff we get to before the fun really starts, that one of these rookies might take a step forward before someone else?
Yeah, we've got a lot of fun here already. We've got 3 days of rookie mini camp in, and we get all the players in tonight and first full camp practice on Sunday. And yeah, I don't think there's any doubt the Chiefs are going to be leaning on this this draft class pretty hard this year. Kingsley Suamadia, the second round pick, is going to most likely start as the left tackle at the beginning of camp, and the Chiefs would like for him to be the tackle at the end of camp too. We'll see what happens, especially over the next 10 days. You know, the first padded practice here will be on the 26th, and that's when you really will get to be able to judge Suamadia and then some of the other rookies too. But that left tackle position is the one that you really are going to be keeping your eye on when the pads come on. But no doubt, I mean, the Chiefs have put a first-round draft pick into the receiver room, which they needed to. Xavier Worthy is going to play a lot this year. The one guy that on the offensive side that probably isn't getting enough attention is the tight end Jared Wiley. He has just looked impressive from day one once he got into camp. Good hands, good route runner, seems to understand the position and the game. Big guy, too, looks like a potential red zone target. I mean, he's definitely, as far as just the 7-on-7 and what you can do during the offseason, has looked like a really effective target and been getting some good chemistry with Mahomes. Again, you know, you got to put the pads on and see what you've got. But I think there's a chance that both those guys potentially really, you know, contribute early for this team, especially, you know, the tight end Wiley, because the Chiefs would like to give Travis a bit more of a rest, you know, throughout the season. And he's not just a complimentary piece. He's a guy that with his size and ability, I think can at least replicate a little bit of what you've got with Travis. And you're not going to be missing as much when Kelce isn't on the field.
Yeah, that's an interesting one, too, with Wiley, because all the rage last year, I remember heading into the playoffs and in the playoffs, was the Chiefs saving their season by going three tight ends, 13 personnel, right? One running back, three tight ends. And obviously, you have Kelce, you have Noah Gray, and now you throw Wiley's name into the mix. Like he might get a lot more playing time on the field than your average third tight end because of just the way the Chiefs might prefer to run their schemes.
Yeah, and you're absolutely right. I mean, they probably won't have to lean on as much 13 personnel as they did last year because they feel like they've bulked up that receiver room,
okay,
not just Worthy, but Hollywood Brown as well. So, but you're still going to see plenty of multiple tight end sets because that's what Andy Reid does.
Yeah.
I mean, and the Andy Reid offense still goes through the tight end. And Wiley, you know, not only do I see Wiley fitting in even some 12 sets with Kelce, but even some 12 sets with Noah Gray too, because, you know, the days of Travis Kelce playing 95% of the snaps are over. You know, that's just crazy. I mean, even if Travis wants to be out there that much, they want to try and limit his, you know, playing time a little bit. Last year with the hyperextended knee, really the first time that he's had an extended injury since his rookie season. And that bothered him all year round. And you know, and the Chiefs really didn't have anybody to go to him. Noah Gray is, I think, a complimentary piece. And Irv Smith, another addition, a nice complimentary piece. But neither of them have the size and the presence of Kelce. Wiley at least has that size. It has that, I think, presence that, you know, you can either put him on the field with Travis or put him on the field with those other guys, and you've got, you know, a good, you know, available targets for your quarterback.
Yeah, I'm always intrigued when you add a guy into a room that already is, like, I would say the tight end room is a strength for the Chiefs, and then you add, and you make a strength a stronger strength, and I don't know how many times I can say strength in a you know, 30-second period here, but we're going to keep going because that is the strength of this team right now. We don't know what the situation is going to be with Rashee Rice. We think Xavier Worthy will have an impact. We hope, you know, Hollywood Brown comes in and, you know, rekindles some of that old form. But let's be honest, more questions in the receiver room right now than in the tight end room, and that can be difficult going into the year when you've got Patrick Mahomes, who said, hey, I love the result last year, but it wasn't very fun because we didn't win as many games as I expected to, and it was kind of more of a slog than what a normal Chiefs season is.
Yeah, there's no doubt. I mean, the receiver room last year didn't come together the way that they thought or hoped. You know, Marquez Valdez Scantling kind of hit a veteran ceiling, I think, and kind of took a step back and had a really tough year last year. Really, the only reliable weapon that developed throughout the season was the rookie Rashee Rice, and he had a fantastic season kind of out of nowhere. You know, having a year that good for a rookie under Andy Reid is something else. Mm. But now, you know, you've got Rice is a year older. The Chiefs are certainly hoping that he won't have to, you know, pay a suspension this year. We'll see what happens with his off-the-field issues and if that does affect his play this season or his time this season. But, you know, the additions of Brown and Worthy means that it's a different conversation. You know, last year the Chiefs, you know, kept seven receivers at one point during the season. And, you know, and that was with like guys like Kadarius Toney and Sky Moore, who both struggled last year with drops and had some issues. This year, you know, those guys are on the bubble. That's where the conversation is. You know, it's like, will both those guys make this team? Whereas a year ago, both those guys were firmly on this team. Hmm. I mean, that's at least where they've made the additions. It's just going to be up to, hey, can Hollywood Brown, can Xavier Worthy, can they make the impact that the Chiefs expect that they can? And this bulked up tight end room, can it, you know, improve on last year too and maybe like make life a little easier for Travis?
We're talking to Matt Derrick, ChiefsDigest.com beat writer, does a great job covering all things KC Chiefs. And I think when we look at their schedule coming into the year, like it's no surprise they're supposed to be one of the best teams in the NFL. Anytime you have Patrick Mahomes on your team, you are going to be expected to not only win the Super Bowl, but also have the best record in the NFL during the regular season. But the win total has been kind of an elusive, a thing for Kansas City to chase over the last couple of years. They've had really good regular seasons. Last year, they didn't have a great regular season. It was an under for them in terms of an 11.5 number, which is what we're looking at now for Kansas City's win total this year. And I'll be honest, Matt, you look at these first two games, I know they're a favorite against Baltimore. I know they're a favorite against Cincinnati. But if there is going to be a Super Bowl hangover, those are not two games that you want to play those first 2 weeks of the season.
No, that's getting your attention early. And those are both two teams that won a piece of the Chiefs. Obviously,
yeah.
The Bengals and the Chiefs have had a big rivalry the last few years. But with the Ravens, AFC Championship game rematch doesn't get any more serious than that. And, you know, and obviously both those two teams should be healthy early in the season. So they should be powerful matchups. And you're right. Last year, remember, the Chiefs, you know, weren't awake in week one. I mean, they did have a week one Super Bowl hangover last year.
Yep.
And the Lions got them on Thursday night. I think that loss, that experience last year is probably going to wake this team up a little bit. So I think you're going to see a bit more attention, a bit more focus, certainly because it's the Ravens as well. That's going to get them up. And, you know, I thought it was interesting what Mahomes did say the other day about, you know, that it was harder and during the regular season and wasn't a lot of fun. So, you know, I'm really intrigued to see how they kind of take that this year into week one. And, you know, because then you do run the risk of putting so much into week one that maybe you're not paying attention to the Bengals in week two.
Yeah.
I do think that, you know, that extra bit of rest will be nice for this team to have the Bengals coming into Arrowhead. But no doubt, I can't think of a tougher way to start. I'm not sure to throw those two games on the road.
This is a tough schedule, and we're gonna unpack it a little bit on the other side after Matt says farewell to us here, because I think there's a couple of tricky spots on this schedule. But Matt, enjoy your last. I guess what you get another couple weeks of freedom, and then it's basically locked in for the next 5 months. So enjoy the time, pal. We appreciate it, and good luck to the coverage this year.
I appreciate it. Have a great one, Jared. Take care.
Awesome stuff. Matt Derrick, of course, beat writer at ChiefsDigest.com. Check out his books, Patrick Mahomes Showtime and At Last. Follow him on social media at Matt Derrick with two R's. So I teased it, and I was thinking about maybe we'll get a little baseball on the other side, but again, sometimes you're talking to one of these guests and you just kind of talk yourself into a circle and then the light bulb goes off. We're going to dive deeper into this Chiefs schedule on the other side. I have two spots already that I'm willing to bet against the Chiefs. Which spots are they? Stay tuned. We wrap up Lombardi Line after this on the other side.